a lot of times on the trip, I thought about the fact that so many brethren were praying. I know that many of you had taken some of the sheets in which I had listed some special prayer requests. I also know that some brethren in LaGrange, Kentucky were doing the same thing with those sheets and praying for those things. And I thought even during the trip, I remembered several of the things I'd put on there, and it was amazing to me how those things were being fulfilled and more. And when I got back and looked again to see what all I put on that, it was even more amazing to see how many of those things were just very blessed by the Lord in ways much greater than what I had imagined. I remember Ephesians 3:20, "Now to him who is able to do far more abundantly beyond all that we ask or think, according to the power that works within us." And I thought about that a lot as well. So many things answered so much more. And if you can't see what you need to see here, then, okay, what am I going to need to... Okay, it's going to come. If you need to move somewhere or whatever, you're welcome to. I've just got some slides of some people and a map from time to time. But it was probably my most productive trip ever, and one of the reasons was Pedro. Most of you know a little bit about the story. Really remarkable. Pedro is a Brazilian, 31, very successful financially and otherwise. He was an IT manager for the government. He also was vice president of a credit union and a variety of other jobs all at the same time. He was going back to school to get another bachelor's degree in economics. And he had saved up a bunch of vacation time and did some other things and managed to get 6 months leave. He'd always wanted to go to Canada. Turned out the credit union had some business for him in Canada. They paid his trip. His father had relatives in Canada. He stayed with them. And he did an English course at a university. But that gave him a lot of time. He didn't have, you know, extra class. He didn't have all these jobs. He didn't have his girlfriend and so forth. And he'd always had some spiritual interest. In fact, he'd read through the Bible when he was a teenager. And so he started really studying the Bible. And he's a very driven person. And he'd always made his one-year plan, his five-year plan, his 10-year plan, and that sort of stuff. When it came to the first of the year and got ready for his one-year plan, he decided not to make a plan this year, but to ask the Lord to direct his life and do whatever would please the Lord. And so he had questions as he studied, and he looked on the internet and found a bunch of garbage, some of which he semi-believed. And then he ran across, I think, a video of Genesis, and was really thought, wow, that's just what the Bible's saying. He started looking on the website and studied more, always waiting for the appeal for money, which is everywhere in Brazilian churches. Then never found that. Eventually delayed. He was afraid, if I send a letter to the website, I'll never get rid of him. But he finally had some really urgent questions, and so he sent a letter. Dennis didn't recognize that it was a Canadian phone number and thought from the first two numbers maybe it was a number in Porto Alegre. So he sent the questions to Thiago in Porto Alegre, where Marcos and Fernando also are. And Thiago was a perfect guy to answer. Very detailed, very careful, very good. And Pedro asked him a couple weeks before he went to Porto Alegre, he said, "Can I come down there this next week? I'm off school for a week and be baptized." I think Thiago drug his feet because he wanted him to come for my study the next weekend. So it was a week or so before he answered. Pedro had bought tickets already and had canceled them and then realized he'd bought them actually for the weekend of the study inadvertently. And so he came down. I didn't know anything about him until I got there, you know, Sandra and Jacob and I, on Thursday about noon. He was coming in about 4 on Thursday afternoon. Marco said when he picked us up that there's this guy in Canada that's coming down to be baptized. And if you know anything about where Porto Alegre is related to Montreal, wow, that was quite a trip. You know, probably not many people have traveled farther than that to be baptized. But he was afraid we were kooks. So he had his return trip, you know, he had round trip air back to Canada. He was going to stay in Canada for about 3 more weeks is all. But he packed his bag thinking, if these are good, I don't want to go back and learn English. I want to learn the Bible. And so pretty quickly we realized what he was thinking, and so I said, well, you could stay with Jacob and Marcos for the first week while Sandra and I were traveling, and then you can join me for the rest of the time, which is exactly what he did. And it was really great for Jacob, because Jacob could teach him in English. He knows English well. And so that was really, really encouraging. There's a lot of great things. He also let it be known fairly early on that he didn't think it'd be good for him to move back to Goiânia, where he was from. And he said, where would be the best place for me? And I thought a while. I said, I don't think there's a better place I could recommend than here in Porto Alegre. And you already know Thiago, and this is where you are. I said, I think that's probably the best situation. So he is living in Porto Alegre. Marcos had just moved out of his apartment into a house, so he's actually taken over Marcos' apartment, renting it as Marcos was doing. So that's really cool. So that's Pedro. And that was just an amazing extra benefit that I would not have expected. Let's see if I can figure out what I'm doing here. There we go. So this is Pedro as well with me, and Pedro without all the hair. He had a funny thing. Somewhere around the first of the year, I don't know when, he realized he wasn't right with God, and he hadn't been baptized. And he decided not to cut his hair or to cut his beard until he was right with God, kind of as a reminder to him that he needed to change. He also told me that, he had been thinking through this process, what am I not willing to give up for God? And that he when he came to the point that he could honestly say nothing, then he knew he was ready to become a Christian. So that was just really cool. It was great to have him on the trip. So the first place that Sandra and me and Jacob went was, let's see, this is the way this goes, was Porto Alegre, right down here. And it was great. They, for the first time we'd ever done this, they had a place where everybody stayed. Several that came from elsewhere, it was, they had basically like dorm rooms, and they had a cafeteria. They fed us. We slept there. There were several places to be, to talk in private or in small groups or whatever. We could be outside as well. I had a nice place. So that was really, really good. And so we studied 1 Kings and half of 2 Kings. Really helpful to be in Porto Alegre. It makes us, appreciate what we have here. Porto Alegre has some really good people, small group. They're eager. But they're young in the faith, and there's no experienced older couples like Sandra and I are, and we have opportunities there to talk with several of the individuals. We spent now one evening talking for quite a while with Everton and Aliza, and Sandra mostly can understand and communicate. I was able to translate a few things to clarify, and they just had some questions, practical questions about the group and some of the things that they were doing that they wanted to know. We do that a little bit by Skype, Sandra and I do, but it's especially helpful to be able to be there in person, and you see so much more need than what we could do. Sandra was able to go back her last 3 days in Brazil. She was back in Porto Alegre and spent some time with several of the ladies there. But that was Thursday through Sunday. This is the room where we did the studies. There were probably about 35 people in most of the studies there, and that's actually the group. And so several of those are from out of town, several of those are our Porto Alegre people, I had asked you to pray especially for Lucas. He's 17. His parents were converted a little over a year ago, and I've been really close to him. We've talked quite a bit. I saw him twice on the trip. I saw him also when I went back to Porto Alegre for just about 3 hours before I left. And so Lucas is the one that was baptized yesterday. That is his cousin, I believe, Eduarda, and she was also baptized yesterday. So that was very, very exciting. Just very encouraging to see the Lord working on Lucas. And I also had asked for prayers for his cousin, Guilherme, Eduardo's brother. And I was able to talk to him. The first time I'd really had a serious conversation with him. It was so great, everybody being together in this facility. It gave me opportunities just to pull people aside and talk to them. And we talked for probably an hour and a half. Really good. Very open. I think he is getting closer to obeying the gospel as well. So that's exciting. So early on that Monday morning then, Sandra and I flew up to Aracaju and were there at Carlos and Patricia's house for a couple days. That was helpful. it's hard to be just there with several new converts, but nobody that's been a Christian very long that you can talk to and work with. So Carla Patricia had several questions for us and some concerns that they had that they wanted to discuss. We were also able to be in the home of a couple of the couples in the congregation there in Aracaju. Sandra had not been there before, so that was nice to have her there as well. I did studies a couple hours each night in the Gospel of John. That's Carl and Patricia. I'm not sure how well you can see some of these, but at least you get the idea. And then on Wednesday, we flew back to Sao Paulo. Sandra spent a couple of nights with Benita, Dennis Allen's wife. We moved to Brazil with them in 93, so that was nice. And I went to some other places and with some other people in Sao Paulo. And then we went to Sao Carlos on Friday. Sao Carlos would be about there, somewhere into there, and spent the weekend in Sao Carlos. They had arranged studies Friday night, Saturday, Sunday afternoon. We did a lot of studies there. That's where they meet. That's a good part of that room. That's not all of the room. I don't know if I've got another. No, I don't have another picture of that room. But there were several people from different places that came to that. We studied Romans 1 to 14 as far as we got in that, and then dealt with some other questions. But also Pedro, when he had called home on Sunday night, he was very concerned about how his family and friends would take his conversion. And his downfall has always been trying to please people. And so he was very worried that they would not receive well. And his worries were somewhat confirmed. His mother was very concerned. She said, "When are you coming home?" He said, "I don't know, whatever the Lord wills." She didn't like that answer and really upset. And he said, "Why don't you guys, I'll make a deal. I'll fly you to somewhere where we're going to be in a study and you can see this for yourself." And so she said, "I'll talk to your father." And he talked to me and said, "Where should they go?" And we decided for them to come this next weekend to Sao Carlos. So they were there and were able to hear the gospel. His parents and his sister, I think his sister might have some interest. I don't think that his parents really do. But while they were there, his father told me, he said, "Our home is open. And we'll invite our friends and relatives. Anytime you want to come to Goiânia, you can just come and you can have studies there." I think he had other motives for that besides just wanting his friends and family to be studied with. But you'll see a little later, we took advantage of that opportunity. A couple of things in Sao Carlos. I'd been really concerned about José Marcos and had a really good conversation with him that Ardiegi was able to be in on, which was a blessing because Ardiegi would be able to help him more since José Marcos has opened up with him. This is Davidji, just a really great guy. He was in Porto Alegre for the studies and then, he lives about by motorcycle that he travels on. He lives a little over an hour away from Sao Carlos. He's really good. He's been a Christian less than a year. He's 19, but a very, very good young man. Very encouraging being around him both weekends. And then Pedro, Jacob, and I, Sandra going back to Porto Alegre, Pedro, Jacob, and I left from Sao Carlos about 1:15 on Monday morning. We went up to Salvador, we rented a car, we met Gerson and Marquinhos in Feira de Santana, and we went to the end of the world, actually about 15 miles beyond the end of the world. Whoa! It's a good thing Pedro likes to drive. He became our driver, and we were on cow paths. It was really bad. But we were going, we spent the night in Gentil do Ouro. I had a really nice place, kind of expensive, but a really nice place on Monday night, 18 kilometers from Itajubaquara, where Romulu lives. Romulu had been converted a year ago when Gerson went there in response to letters he'd sent to the website. Gerson had been with him 4 hours a year ago. That was the only Christian he had ever met. So Gerson, Marquinhos, me, Pedro, and Jacob went. We got to Itajubaquara about, he's got his eyes closed, but about, let me show you again where, about 9:15 on Tuesday morning, and somewhere in through there. And we're able to spend until about 4:30 with Homolu. I studied with him. Jerison studied with him. Jacob led a study with him that I translated. We sang together. He'd never sung with other Christians. We prayed together. We talked together. He's an orphan, but he lives with his aunt and uncle. His aunt actually fed us lunch, which we were surprised. This is actually, he had the keys and authority to use. This is a little Catholic church that we use where we have the studies. And they're fine with him doing that. He's actually, before he became a Christian, he'd actually even done some preaching there. Not like for their masses, but he was allowed to use the church. This is a small town. There's not a lot of denominational strength in that. But it was really great to be with Homolu. He seemed to be doing fine, even though he's very isolated. So it was worth the effort to get there and get back. That was not easy either. We left Itajubaquara about 4:30, and we got to Jehia about 4:15 in the morning. So that was a long drive. But Pedro did most of it. I did about the last 3 hours, but I was able to do that. I slept some in the car, so that was good. And we went to Jequia. We spent a day and a half there. This is Jerison and Marquinhos from Jequia. And Marquinhos is doing well. It's very good to be around him. I had been hoping Marquinhos would set up for me to spend some time with a couple of the young men. Children whose parents are Christians that he's been working with a lot that I know. I think both of these young men are 14. They had both decided to be baptized, and so on Wednesday we watched them be baptized. This is Jaja, and this is Fernandinho. And so that was really exciting to see both of them be baptized. Jerison took them into the river and baptized Fernandinho, and then did the same with Jaja. There were several other good opportunities in Jequia. Jerison's son, Mateus, is 18. I really like him a lot. He's very quiet, but he's very serious and a good young man. There were some others. I taught there on Wednesday night. A couple of the young men came up to me and wanted to talk some. That was helpful. The church there is doing terribly. I've talked to Marquinhos since I left. Two of the men have basically are trying to split the group. It's a small group and complicated anyway. So I'm concerned about the young men who were baptized and some of the younger ones that are trying to do what's right. It's a difficult situation. I know the group in Jequia really well. But it was a very good opportunity there. And I hope that even with some of the difficulties, some of the ones who are really trying will be able to do well. We left Jequia Thursday afternoon by the rental car, went back to Salvador, and took a plane to João Pessoa. We arrived there about midnight. We spent the night, more or less, and then left early the next morning for Fortaleza. And we had to actually end up renting a Doblo, which is a 7-passenger vehicle, not a 5-passenger one, because Bladson, Juninho, and Sandro accompanied the three of us to Fortaleza. That was really great, very good to have them, and I wasn't sure any of them were able to go, so that was really good. The Presidente Vargas Church, by far the biggest one in Fortaleza, it has a lot of struggles, but we had really good studies. They had rented a school building, really unkempt school building, but for Saturday afternoon, had probably, I don't know, 50 people maybe in those studies. This is Salo, he's 21, really probably the leader of the group, really strong young man, very fine young man. And his brother, Luan, who's 16, really good guy. Both of them were in Porto Alegre as well. Several things went really well in those studies and the conversations and so forth on that Friday, Saturday, and Sunday. I was able to spend Friday night with the group in Passaré, one of the other churches in Fortaleza, and Sunday night. Sunday night, they've just baptized 5 people in Passaré, which pretty much about half again to the group. I think there were about 10 Christians there before this. And don't ask me their names, but two of the ones that they baptized are former Mormons. This man and that young man in the green, blue, whatever that is. So that was exciting. I was able to talk to them a little while, and some good good things. And then we left really early Monday morning from Fortaleza because Sandro needed to work that day, and came back to João Pessoa. And I was able to spend a couple of days in João Pessoa. That went really well. One of the people that I really have a lot of concerns for is Bladson. Bladson's single mother, complicated situation. He's 16, almost 17. I spent a lot of time with him. He's really struggled. But this was probably the best time I've seen him. He probably was doing the worst. But the trip to Fortaleza really helped him. And I think he's been doing a lot better since we got back. I'm very excited about that. That is Bladson with Pedro. And so that went really well. I had some other good opportunities to talk to people, some rather tense but helpful conversations. You know, the thing I see in Brazil so much is just there's not many mature, long-term Christians. I mean, they're mostly relatively new converts. And, you know, not only are there in this congregation several people who've been Christians for a long time and have studied the Bible and they've thought about how to, you know, raise their families and things like that, but there's churches all around here that have strong Christians in them that many of us know. And there's, you know, preachers that come in and gospel meetings here, there, and yonder. There's a lot of resources to have encouragement. A church like João Pessoa, it's most, the nucleus is a couple a little older than we are, and four of their boys, three of whom are married, and their wives are Christians. That's the nucleus of the group, that family. Then people like Bladson and half a dozen others. And but if they wanted to go somewhere where they could get encouragement from another group of Christians, I think they're probably about halfway between Aracaju and Fortaleza, both about a 9-hour drive. And I don't know of other groups of Christians that are closer than that to them. You know, so you just don't have, you know, places to turn. So you go there, and they have all kinds of questions, all sorts of practical situations, sometimes complicated situations that have come up that they don't necessarily know where to turn. So so it was good being in João Pessoa. Then Pedro and Jacob and I left João Pessoa on Wednesday afternoon and flew to Brasília. And that was encouraging. We stayed in the home of Sandro and Claudia with their three boys. This picture is two of their boys. They were in Brasília, in Porto Alegre also. This is Tomás, and this is Conrado. Tomás will be here in the States, some with us, in early July. He does speak some English, sort of. Chad's been studying with him some. That's a little complicated in English, but he is young and he'll learn. He's 15. Conrado's 13. And some really cool things in Brasília. I don't know the group there. I've never been in a worship service there. But I'm meeting some as time goes on. It's a small group. But one of the ladies in the congregation has just started a job working in a government building. A few weeks ago, and she found they've got sort of a room that's, they call an ecumenical center. It's kind of for religious things, and different religious people will do stuff in there. And so she got permission to have the room on Thursday while I was there from 1 to 2, actually while I was in Brazil. Sandro sent me a message and said, can you teach from 1 to 2 or whatever on Thursday? Can you teach the parable of the sower? So that's what we did. There were probably 12 or 14 non-Christians that listened extremely well and had several questions. You know, and one of them talked to me and said, could you come to my church and teach? I said, well, maybe when I come back to Brasília, we exchange contact information and so forth. But just good opportunities that, you know, might be a little harder to come by in that quantity here. I don't know. But really good to see that they were seeking to evangelize in that way. My intention had been to leave Friday morning from Brasília and go to Manaus. However, they had not, the hand of the Lord, I believe, but they had not scheduled public studies in Manaus until Saturday afternoon. Usually they do starting Friday night when I get there. I don't know why they didn't, but I realized they hadn't, and I thought this is an opportunity I could go to Pedro's family and take advantage of that invite to teach his family and friends. And so I wrote the brethren of Manaus. I said, here's the situation. I think it would be better for me to go and do that. I think I'll have an opportunity to teach some people. And they wrote back and said, we'd be thrilled for you to have that opportunity. We want more people to hear the gospel. And so I arranged to go on Saturday morning to Manaus. And so Pedro's father drove from Goiânia up to Brasília and picked us up and then took us back to Goiânia. Thankfully, he was slow and late, and there was a lot of traffic, and so we didn't get to Goiânia, to Pedro's family's house, till probably a little after 2:30. That was really a blessing, because that was a trial by fire. It was really difficult for Pedro, somewhat for me. His family is very possessive. His friends are, too. They don't like the idea of him not being in Goiânia, I think mostly because it's not for a job or something noble, it's for the gospel. And so it was obvious as soon as we got there, a lot of friends and family were gathered. It would be kind of like it were an open house for him, except it was one after another taking him privately and pressuring him not to leave Goiânia. And his father came to me and said, I've got one request. Pedro will listen to you. The family's all up in arms. Can you please talk him into staying here at least 3 or 4 days so he can see everybody and so forth? I said, no, I don't think that would be the best thing for him. They had his ex-girlfriend there. That was not a good situation. They were trying to use her against him morally. But he was did very well. It was very exhausting for him. They used a lot of emotional pressure, but he said he was praying the whole day for strength and for patience, not to say and do the wrong thing, and he did well. And they allowed me to teach. I started probably about 8:15. There were probably at least a dozen non-Christians there, maybe more than that. And so I just taught kind of a basic lesson on being a disciple, started with Moses in Hebrews 11, and talked about the requirements of discipleship and why. And then we opened it up for discussion, and wow, we stayed another couple hours with all of that. Not all of that was overly profitable. There was a doctor who decided to give a long speech that, you know, basically why you shouldn't believe the Bible. But you know, still, there was some really good discussion as well. A couple of people who seemed pretty interested. And so that was that. Pedro needed to get back there. He hadn't been back there since he left Canada, and yet he didn't need to go by himself. So this was an opportunity to do that as well. And so then, early Saturday morning, Pedro's dad, let me see, I think I've got Pedro's family here, don't I? Yeah, that's Pedro's parents and his sister that he's got beside him. I do think she may be somewhat interested. She is reading the Bible, and she's got some questions. So that's encouraging. And so he took us back to Brasília, and we got on a plane and flew to Manaus. And that was good. We had studies, 1 Corinthians. We were able to basically get into chapter 13, more or less. I wasn't able to do the whole book in the time we had allotted for the studies. But lots of questions and lots of discussion, lots of things they wanted to know about. And again, lots of situations that maybe in a church like this, we would have resolved differently. But as soon as I got there, Van der Lee, where I was staying, told me about Lucas that I know. He's 17 and really shy. Well, I didn't know this, but Lucas had gotten involved in some things that he shouldn't have. And as a result of that, the church had withdrawn from him. And as a result of that, he had repented of those things and wanted to be reconciled to the Lord, certainly, and to the church. And they said, okay, you need to come up in front of the group and make a statement to the group about what you've done and your repentance. Well, he's very shy and didn't feel like he could do that. And so Van der Lee was telling me that and said, so therefore he's still withdrawn from. And I said, well, biblically, do we have a requirement that a person has to get up in front of a group and make a statement? He said, I've been wondering that too. That's what they say, but I don't see that. And so I said, let me talk to him. So we went early and we called Lucas ahead of time. And I told him I wanted to talk to him. So I sat down with him, talked to him. I felt like he was repentant. He was very open about what he'd done. He's a really troubled young man. His family's very complicated. But he's very sincere and honest with me. He's quiet, but he answered my questions well. We prayed together at the end. He didn't want to pray himself, but I asked him to, and he did. It was a very good prayer, very encouraging. And so I suggested to him, I said, why don't you write a letter and just explain, you know, your repentance and, you know, whatever, and let people read it. You know, maybe they can read it in front of the group or whatever. And so he said, yeah, that's a good idea. He'd do that. Then one of the, probably the leading man, lives right beside the church building. So I asked to talk to him. So I explained to him the conversation, what had happened. He said, yeah, that's fine. And he said, we can even just talk to him. He doesn't have to come in front of the group, though that is what they'd said. Well, the funny thing is, one of the other men in the congregation was talking to Lucas, and Lucas was telling him about writing this letter. And this other man told me this. He took me back to Vanderlei's house. And so he was telling me, well, Lucas was going to write this letter. And I told him, well, I don't see any Bible pattern where you can write a letter and somebody read it. And I said, well, do you see any Bible pattern where somebody has to come before a group and make a public statement? And he immediately saw that and said, well, no, I guess we've been requiring something that we shouldn't. And so he apologized to Lucas. And the next, on Sunday, several of the men and I got together and sat down and talked with Lucas. And they then expressed for him his repentance. And I think he's on the right track again. And really, he needs them to reach out to him more. And they were kind of, maybe he shied away from them a little bit and they weren't sure what to say. But I encouraged them, and he, with my questions, encouraged them to reach out to him and to talk to him when they feel like he needs help. So that was the trip. I don't think I got any more than that. Which is really, really encouraging all the way around. And one of the things that, you know, I appreciate you guys doing and want to encourage is the interest that you are taking more and more in these things. I realize it's really difficult to even grasp the people and places and stuff in a report, and I don't know how to talk about it without talking about people and places. But I want you to feel very free to talk, to ask questions, you know, from here on out. I talk to Brazilians almost every day, so I'm always, you know, involved with them. I'm hoping some of you can eventually talk to Pedro on Skype. He speaks English very well. That wouldn't be a problem. I think you can be encouraging to him. Right now he doesn't have a job. He's, I think, going to quit his job in Goiânia, and he'll be seeking a job. He can get one easily, I think, but he'll have time on his hands in a new city, so it'd be helpful. But just in general, I appreciate your caring and your being willing to be involved in these things, you know, asking questions and taking an interest. And I'd like to encourage you to continue to do that. And it's helpful for me to be able to tell the brethren there that you guys care about them and are eager to know more about them. I would also like to say this. You know, you go to Brazil, and there's 200 million lost people there. And not many people taught the gospel very much there. And you see people like Pedro, who are willing to go from Montreal to Porto Alegre to be baptized. And you know, you realize, wow, there's so much needs to be done to evangelize there. But the thing that it also makes me think is how much needs to be done to evangelize here. It is true. There's a lot more Christians in Johnson County than there probably are in any equivalent county in Brazil. But that does not mean that everyone around here who would be open to the gospel has been taught. And we need to be seeking to spread the gospel more and to be offering opportunities to read the Bible with people. The same things I encourage the brethren there to do, we need to do. And we haven't done nearly like we should do. And as a group, some individuals here I think are, but I don't think as a group, you know, across the board, in other words, that we've all done as well as we should have. And so I want us to really think about, you know, the same gospel that saves Brazilians saves Americans and saves anyone else. And won't it be a shame, you know, on the day of judgment, if there were people who lived all around us that we never even talked to about the Lord, we never mentioned the gospel to, we never offered to read the Bible with them. We can't do everything at once, but we can start doing some things. And I think that's something we really need an exhortation in. That I think we probably don't do as well as we need to do it. So I'd like for you to not only think about thanking God for the work in Brazil and praying on behalf of Pedro and others there, but really asking God's help to motivate us and to accompany us as we really seek to spread the gospel in this area as well. We're going to sing an invitation song for any who would like to turn to the Lord tonight, and then we're going to sing a couple of songs about our work of teaching the gospel to others. Let's stand.